in the Pattern Podcast. Make left traffic, clear for the option.
Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 Mike Delta.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold code on 133, ready to take off.
Alpha Delta, 5322, I'm Mike, and I'm downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
Welcome to episode 13 of the In the Pattern Podcast. This is Chris, and along with me in the virtual hangar tonight is John Conway and Brad Kane. I did get that right this time. I won't make
sure enough.
Try not to make that mistake twice. And our buddy Mark Lacoste will be along shortly, we hope. He should be back soon. But until then, we'll get things rolling, and Mark will jump in when he jumps in. I'm all ready to go. Got my Leinenkugel and a new flavor, the Summer Shandy. I haven't had this yet. So.
Oh, I totally bought some of that now, and I'm drinking it.
You too?
Right now, yeah. Oh. I bought a sampler pack because I wanted Sunset Wheat, but then I was like, I had the Summer Shandy at Oshkosh.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, this stuff is so good. It's like lemonade, but beer.
Well, yeah, I've had... I like what was the other one? The Sunset Wheat, right?
The Sunset Wheat is my favorite.
And then there's the Berry Wise, which I'm not a fan of. That tastes like a wine cooler to me.
Yeah.
And what's the other one?
There's the Bock. There's the Amber. There's a Lager.
The Amber.
Classic Amber?
Yeah, the Classic Amber. And that's been my favorite so far. And then it's summertime, so they get the Summer Shandy out here. So I like it. Nice stuff.
Yeah. Go to Oshkosh, you can get it for cheap.
Yeah, yeah. I got a 12-pack for $13.
Aww,
13 and some change. Not bad.
It cost me $16 for the 12 sampler pack.
We don't have the sampler. I got to go find that. It's not at my grocery store, but yeah, I always like the samplers. So, we are ready to go and do this thing here. I've been doing a little bit of flying. John's been doing a little bit flying, and Brad's been doing a lot of flying, I think. Right, Brad?
Well, I'm trying. Actually, I was just looking at the chart, and I'm going to be – if I just go to the spot where I was thinking about going tomorrow, I'm going to be about 20 miles from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, So home of Leinenkugels. So it might be fun to make it over there and do the tour.
There you go. Heck yeah. So Brad, you're doing the instrument thing, and so last week you're just getting started into it, right?
Yeah, the last time we talked, I was I had yet to do my checkout, and since then, I think the last time we talked was May 12, and since then I have gone flying 5 times, and I'm going again tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah, it's being in a club is really nice.
Yeah, way to beat a path to that ticket there, man. Getting that knocked out.
Only two of those were IFR training.
Oh, okay.
But I did pick up. What did I get? Four and a half hours of IFR training.
And you need 40 hours total.
40 hours total, 10 of which can be simulated. And you need a total of 15 with an instructor, and the balance can be with a safety pilot, a non-certified, actually not instrument rated, just has to be a private pilot.
Just a friend, a fellow pilot friend, huh?
Yep.
So that's
somebody
cool.
Wants to sit in the right seat and look for traffic.
Well, that ain't hard to find, huh?
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I told my friend I'd do it if he needed it.
Yeah. Well, that's cool because a buddy of mine, Dean, the guy who has the little Cessna 140, he works for Honeywell, and he does the Bendix King tech support for them. And so they pay up to, I don't know, $3,000 or something towards your instrument, maybe more.
Wow.
Maybe half of it or something like that. So anyways, he put in for it and has been approved, but still waiting for whatever red tape to get taken care of because he hasn't got the money from him or whatever. And then he's going to get his instrument, go for his instrument shortly. And it's going to be awesome because he's going to my instructor who I use, which that's how I found my instructor was he recommended her to me. They both got their training from the same instructor. So that's how they know each other. So anyways, he's going to be checked out in 4 Mike Alpha, the same plane that I fly.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure I'll be his safety pilot, so that'll be a blast.
Nice.
Outstanding.
Yeah. That's like free instrument training for me, huh?
Well, except for the hood. Don't wear the hood when you're being the safety pilot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They probably wouldn't like that.
No.
Let's both put on the hood. No.
It could get a little surprising.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying the instrument training. It's very different. I did the first flight. I actually ended up my instructor, my CFII, is not in the flying club that I'm in. He owns his own Saratoga, and so he needed to get checked out. So the first flight that I did, we met up at the airport with one of the club CFIs and just had to look at his logbook and say, oh, gee, you only have 2,000 hours in Pipers. I guess you're good to go. But then the club CFI wanted a favor and just wanted to get shuttled from one of the nearby airports to another one to get to reposition his car to help him reposition a plane. And so managed to pick up some actual with two CFIIs in the plane. That was a little intimidating, but it worked out.
All right. What kind of equipment's in the plane that you're using for IFR?
There's two planes that I've been using so far. One of them, the Archer, has a Garmin 430 and a pretty nice radio stack, along with dual VOR DME. And then there's a Warrior, which just has dual VOR DME. And ADF. I got to exercise the ADF on my second flight and did an ADF hold. I've never used ADF before, probably like the rest of you.
So they actually exist, huh?
Yeah, no, they still exist.
I thought it was just something that's on every test and, you know.
I've been reading about those.
Exactly. They exist and they work. And so we went off and did an NDB hold in 20 knots, a crosswind, and then flew an NDB approach, and that's kind of funny. It's really bizarre, the whole instrument thing, where you're staring at the panel for a really long time, and then all of a sudden you look up and there's the runway, and you can just land on it. it's kind of surreal. In that respect, because you know, at one level, that's the way it's supposed to work. But when it actually does work that way, you're kind of like, "Wow, this is all right."
That's cool.
But that first trip up into the clouds is it catches you a little bit. You know, you're like, "Wow, all of those visual cues are gone. I guess I better pay attention to this stuff on the panel."
Mm-hmm. Trust the gauges. Use the force.
Yeah, but I managed to keep it, you know, keep within the specs, the PTS standards for the whole flight, which was my goal. I wanted to keep it a little tighter than I did, but I'm still just getting used to kind of how to manage the plane and how to manage my scan, learning all of that stuff. So the rest of it'll come. I've got quite a few hours to go.
That's what I'm up against right now with just this hood work. Kind of that same thing, you know. I just did my second hood work flight last week, and we'll get into that in a little bit later. But yeah, it's better than my first time, but still not quite as good as I was hoping I was going to do. You know, Mark's on with us now, huh?
Hey guys,
there's Mark. Welcome.
Thanks.
All right.
So I heard what ADS 80 ADFs something.
Yeah. Yeah, those funny NDBs.
Wow, those really exist in a GPS world?
Yeah, they do, when you don't have a GPS in the aircraft. No, I think if I take my check ride in the Warrior with the ADF, I'm going to put a little piece of tape over that says inoperative.
you're gonna in op it for yourself. that's pretty cool.
I don't blame you for that.
Yeah.
It's not bad. The hardest part is just getting used to the wind correction, because you're going to correct, you know, you may correct, you'll set yourself up, like we were coming in on a 312 degree bearing to the NDB, and that was the bearing we needed to hold for this approach, but the wind was pushing right across us, and so you've got to bring the plane. You have to turn the plane some number of degrees so that the NDB reads the same number of degrees in the opposite direction.
Wow.
and that's how you'll hold that. So if I wanted to go, if I had to turn to like 300 degrees and then the NDB read 324 and that gave me a 312 degree track. And the NDB is way off on the other end of the panel. Right, the ADF rather is way off on the other end of the panel. So you're focusing on these six gauges, and you have to turn your head and look at that one, and then go back and get your scan back, and then figure out what to do with the plane. That's what really makes it hard.
Now, is this one of those movable card or the fixed ones?
This is a movable card, so okay. that takes that part of it out.
That's good.
Because I kept seeing all the questions, you know, and I'm sure Chris is going through this right now. If he's actually studying.
Man, that was funny.
Burn.
You know, with all the movable and non-movable and how to read it.
You know, there's a good program that another CFII told me about for iPhone junkies, which is called Nav Trainer. And it'll do HSI, VOR, and ADF, and you can train on it, and it'll show you, you know, hey, if you put the plane at this angle and this position relative to the VOR, and you dial this in, what are you going to see on the display? And then it'll test you. It'll plot four planes out on the virtual chart, and it'll show you the readings, and you have to say, okay, which airplane is it that would give you this indication? And it's a good way to kind of keep the headwork going.
Okay. That's pretty cool. Did you have you tried it on that one that we were talking about? What was
the VOR one?
The Luis.
Yeah.
Yep, that's a good one too. Mm-hmm. That is also a good one.
Yeah, that one actually solved all my VOR issues. All the bad stories that I had heard and tried to figure it out myself. I played with that for 10 minutes and I went, oh, uh-huh. I get it. Done.
I learned VOR from Flight Simulator. There's like I had a ground school book when I was like 15 that I was reading because I've always wanted to, you know, fly and everything. So I was always studying a little bit here and there. So I read about it and then I just tried it out in Flight Sim and I was like, oh, this is easy. And then I don't know. I just.
It gets weird. A little more complicated when you're doing dual VORs on an instrument approach.
I haven't even gone to the whole dual VOR thing yet. I'm a little scared of that one.
With a 20-knot crosswind and...
Right, when you're doing crosswind correction and the plane is bouncing all over the place.
In a downpour.
Yeah, and the wife is going, I hate this. I'm going to be sick.
Yeah, in my hood work, it's been... difficult for me for knowing how to correct properly to intercept the radial for the VOR, the doing it the right way. You know, I've done all these cross countries and I always got to where I wanted to go using a VOR, right? But I really wasn't doing it, you know, the right way. And I was probably chasing it a whole lot doing that. And now I'm learning to kind of sneak up on it, you know, more slowly and then being able to stay on it. With
bracketing and all that.
Yeah. So being told how to do it and then actually learning how to do it the correct way is two different things altogether.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I found. The ability to keep my situational awareness just isn't there yet when I'm staring at the panel. I'm too busy trying to get the airplane to go where I want it to keep in mind where I am on the chart. And this was all done. I did this on my iPad for charting, but I shut off the GPS. So I didn't have the little blue plane telling me exactly where I am. And that, you know, you really have to be on the game to kind of know where you're at and where you're going to be next when you don't have the cues from the GPS helping you out.
Yeah, I can't imagine that, because I mean I'm feel overwhelmed sometimes in perfect VFR trying to navigate and fly the plane. Not, you know, much less trying to do it on IFR.
It's a good challenge. It's in some ways it's a lot easier than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
You know, in other ways, I'm sure it's going to prove to be difficult just to get the fine tune down and to be able to just say, okay, for this procedure turn, this is how I need to do it, or to enter this holding pattern, this is the way I need to do it. But
yeah, I found that nav trainer. They got it for Android too.
Oh, do they? Cool.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. It's $4.99, but, said it includes VOR, HSI, RMI, ADF fixed card, DME, and ILS simulation.
There you go.
What is HSI?
HSI is the best thing ever.
Oh, yeah.
That's the thing you want in your plane.
I like the HSI. We have one HSI in the Archer and then one regular VOR.
Yeah.
And
so what?
Well,
what is it? Do
I don't
know. Or maybe I've heard of it and I'm confused at the moment. I don't know, but
I don't know if the reason why you have it has something to do maybe with your if you have autopilot. Does that sound right, Brad?
No, it's just a visualization tool for the pilot.
It's got the heading bug that you can turn, and that heading bug is slave to your autopilot, and you can change course by just turning that dial, which the regular VOR doesn't have.
Right. Well, like the DGs in my plane have a heading bug, but they don't have an HSI. They just have a directional gyro. Mm. So the HSI combines the DG with the OBS, the VOR display, so that you can see, here's the plane, here's the direction the plane is flying, here's the radial that you dialed in on the VOR, and here's where the plane is relative to that radial. And it takes care of all of the reverse sensing junk that just goes away. It makes it a lot easier to visualize where you are with respect to a radial on the VOR.
Oh, okay.
It just combines all of that stuff into one display, and it's all integrated together.
Instead of, long needle dropping down and banking left or right inside the glass, there's a needle that's this slides left or right in the HSI, and it's in between a top and a bottom portion of that needle, and when it finally centers up, then of course you're on the radial.
Okay, I see. I just looked up a thing for it. Yeah, we don't have one of those. Though I do have the heading bug that ties into the autopilot. And actually we can tie the VOR is tied into the autopilot either. I can do VOR, heading, or GPS.
Right.
Which works out nicely, but... Okay, that's cool. Oh, it's used on the space shuttle.
Awesome.
Probably a couple.
Yeah. Everybody gets one in there.
What's everybody else been up to?
John took someone flying, right?
I did. I took a good friend of mine up. He's always kind of been excited about flying, always kind of wanted to do it, but like me for a while, never had the money for it or anything like that. So he was so excited. We went up to Chester County and, had some lunch. So it was a very interesting flight. It'd been a little over 2 months since I'd flown. It was a big learning experience for me.
2 months. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been 2 months. So, you know, I did a lot of pre-flight stuff, you know, thinking about the flight and all that, kind of getting myself mentally prepared for it, because it'd been a little while. My instructor was actually there that day, gave me the checklist I had made finally printed out. So I got a chance to use that this time. I actually used it on the way back, not on the way up. But it's a lot easier to use than the other checklist that's in the plane. It's a little easier to handle, so that helped a lot.
Yeah, good checklist is your friend.
Yeah, especially because the other one, it's like this binder thing, so you can't fold it back and leave it at a certain place. Mm. So it's like when I need to get to something, I have to open it and then find where I need to go every time instead of saying, okay, well, I just did this. Let me leave it here and then I can come right back to it. So it's really annoying. You know, we get in the plane. Everything was, I don't think anything really happened in the pre-flight. It was going pretty well. You know, I went through everything. That went fine. Did the run up. I spent a lot of time on the ground just making sure I had everything right, like all my navigation right, everything in ahead of time. So I took a little extra time on the ground this time just to make sure that, like, double check everything so I didn't get behind. It was a pretty nice day, except there was the clouds were a little low, so I didn't quite get to the altitude I wanted to be. And they weren't too low. I was still pretty far below them, but it also made for, it was a little bumpy. and I thought my friend wouldn't have an issue with that because he's the kind of guy you figure wouldn't be afraid of anything.
And until you know, nobody bounce the airplane.
Nobody else has had any issues, right? So we take off. I forgot the camera part of the lights, camera, action.
So you got the call.
I didn't get a call actually.
Oh,
I didn't. I got up. I'd gotten up to about 1,000 feet, climbing out, and I looked over and I was like, "Oh, switch," and then I was like, okay, well, that, all right, whatever. One little mistake, it's fine. Nobody, you know, I'll move on. And then it was just bumpy. Bumpy enough that I was kind of fighting the plane a little bit. So I was sitting there thinking, okay, well, let me throw on the autopilot real quick, and I'll let that handle the plane for just a second so I can get to where I need to go real quick. And then that just, I don't know, it did something I didn't like. Like it wasn't bad. It was just, I think it was my comprehension of what it should have done wasn't what it did. Maybe because it had been so long, I don't know. But then I just switched that off. I'm like, oh crap. So I'm getting a little flustered. Because it was starting to, like, there was a lot of stuff going on at the same time, and I was starting to lose a little bit of the handle on what was going on. Between that and the bumpiness, I think my friend kind of noticed a little bit. So when we got down, he was a little nervous. So I eventually, you know, after like 5 minutes, I got everything under control. I was going where I need to go. I mean, it was a place I'd been before. But it was very tense, like 5 minutes for me. So I very much starting to see how you can, you know, taking time off, you start to lose a little bit of stuff, you know. And I'm starting to see more why currency is the way it is. So anyway, we made it there, had a good lunch, came back. I let him fly straight and level for a little bit. And I was going to go over and do some slow flight just to get some practice in. And I was like, well, do you want to go do anything? And he's just sitting there and he's like, nah, I'm good. And like the whole time he was flying like straight and level, he had both hands on the yoke. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, you don't have to do that. I'm like, you can use just your one hand and leave the other hand there. He's like, nope, I'm good. And I was like, I was sitting there and I'm like,
His knuckles are white.
Yeah. And I didn't know what to do. And
then you show him the hands off flying.
Yeah. I didn't know what to do there because it was the first time I've had a nervous passenger. And it was the one person I didn't expect to be nervous. It was weird because, like, even my mom loved it. My mom was terrified to go up. He was excited to go up and was nervous as hell. So, and we got back down, you know, we talked about it. And he's like, I know it's one of those things. He's like, I'm really scared of heights. And, you know, it was a new experience. It was a little bumpy. And he's like, I know it's one of those things where if I did it a couple times, I get used to it. So he's not turned off to flying or anything like that. I think he still wants to go up again. You know, and get some more time in the plane just to get used to it. So it was just a very new experience for me, having a nervous passenger and trying to figure out how to deal with that and how to make him calmer. I'm still not quite sure, you know, necessarily all the things to do there. I don't know. But a mix of that and then just not flying in a while. And it was a, God, every flight so far has just been the biggest learning experience.
Well, they call it the license to learn.
Mm-hmm. It is, man.
And that it is, huh?
Oh, yeah. Like, I kind of understood that when you're training, but I guess when you're training, you're always with the instructor and you're always, like, studying for, and, you know, I guess you're on top of it, but I don't know. Ever since I got the license, it's been, wow, interesting. So, that was our little flight. So, I guess another bunch of things to add to the list of stuff I've learned and stuff to look out for and do differently next time.
So, how long was that flight?
It was about 2 hours total because I spent a lot of time on the ground. You know, just making sure everything was okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I will say, however, my first landing at Coatesville was actually not bad.
Yeah.
I like the whole cross country thing, you know, I get flustered in that, but as soon as it comes time to land, I mean, all of them, that whole flight, because I came back and did another two landings to get my currency, and all of them were pretty good. The middle one wasn't as good, but I mean, I don't know. I guess I was very happy when I got up there and that landing was as good as it was. Cause after the flight I had, I was like, okay, you know, I'd expect it to be a little rough, but no, it was fine.
Nice.
That's the only part he'll remember anyway.
Yeah, so I'm glad I at least got that part down.
my buddy Todd took some friends up for a flight. I think they were like, I don't know, probably one of his first passengers he ever had. And it was one of those days where after it's all said and done, he should have scrubbed the flight from the get-go. There was just way too much wind. And it even scared him on landing, just like getting sideways and stuff. And after he got done, he called me and stuff. He said, Chris, I am never, ever, ever doing that again. I was like, well, yeah, man. I'm like, there is a maximum demonstrated crosswind component that you know that plane has the ability to do or not do. And you took off and it was even more than that. So, you know, you never know if it's going to get worse or better. So, yeah, you just, you know, sometimes you just got to scrub it and hope for a better day.
That's one of the things I've been learning so far is it's very hard to make that decision now. You always say when you're learning, it's like, oh, I'll never do that. And then you get to it and you're like, you know, maybe I shouldn't have just done that.
Yeah.
It's just a really hard, you know, I guess when everything's on your plate, then, you know, I guess you're still in that mindset of, oh, my instructor won't let me do it if it's too bad. But then it's just you. And I guess sometimes you have to make the mistake to learn from it as long as it's not too bad. But still.
Yeah. Yeah. He actually it might have been this flight because he had mentioned something where he was. Yeah, I think. Yeah, it was these people. I think he flew him up to Flagstaff. Right. And he's using the VOR or no, he's using the GPS to get to Flagstaff. And, you know, according to the GPS, you know, he should be all over the Flagstaff airport at this point and he's not seeing it. And he calls them and they, you know, they clear him to land and he's still not sure of where the airport is. And they have some conversation back and forth and, you know, he finally gets on the ground. And so, you know, he tells me this and we talk a little bit later and I'm like, well, what did you put into the GPS? He said, well, FLG for Flagstaff. I go, well, there's your problem. He goes, what's that? I'm like, you dialed into the VOR, which isn't actually on the property. It's 2 miles away. You got to do KFLG to get to the airport. So there's a tip for all you that maybe wondering why you missed an airport or whatever is that K for the airports, and especially if they got a VOR somewhere around the premises. If it's not there, you might not make the airport. Because he's like, they said, well, we show you a couple miles away, but in like the wrong direction of, you know, where he should be pointing the airplane, you know. So, yeah, he missed it based on what he typed into the GPS there.
Well, that's the same thing Tupper did when he was doing his IFR. He thought he dialed in the Pontiac VOR, and it was actually taking him to somewhere in Korea or China.
He's like, I don't know
luckily,
if I got enough apps to
Well, the controller comes on, and she's all, whatever his call sign is, are you taking the scenic route to Pontiac?
I mean, there is a reason, though, why a lot of the GPSs do verify what you're clicking on. Yeah. It's like Northeast U.S. Is this the airport you want?
Mm-hmm.
I guess a lot of us at this point are just like, yeah, that's right. Enter. Okay, we're good.
Let's go. Yeah.
I guess it's one of those things, you know, you should probably read that because you might end up in, I don't know, Korea. So, Chris.
Yeah.
You've been flying?
I flew last week. And did 1.7 hours on the Hobbs meter, of which I got 1.3 for a hood work. Getting a little bit better at it, like I said. I wasn't, you know, as all over the place as I was before, and like trying to get on the VOR, and next thing you know, I'm 300-400 feet higher than I need to be, or this or that, you know. So we did some more VOR work, and I'm starting to figure out, like I said, understanding how to intercept the radio properly and use each. You know, I never understood until this time that each dot off of that is 2 degrees. I never really knew what those dots were for. I don't know why I never read that, or maybe I did and it just never sunk in.
Wow.
That was
unless you're on GPS.
Yeah. So that's helpful for doing a little bit of the math and this and that. We did that reverse sensing to the VOR. So, you know, when that happens, the needle might be to the right, but you actually need to go to the left because it's reverse. So, were you going to say something, John?
What's the dots when you're doing it off GPS?
Depends on how you're going to ask me this, and I'm going to get it wrong, and everybody's going to laugh at me on Twitter. I believe it depends on your route of flight. If you're basically just motoring along on your GPS, it's 2 nautical miles per dot.
Oh, instead of degrees, it's miles?
Right. Instead of degrees, it's miles.
Okay. That's what I knew at one point. I just forgot.
Funny when you get close with the GPS.
Okay.
All right. So I've only really need, you know, 7/10 of an hour left, but I'll probably do another hour and a half or so of it, just because that's one of the things I don't want to mess up with the DPE. We did some steep turns while under the hood, and those all turned out good, actually. Because I think even when I did my steep turns back on lesson number 3 or 4 or whatever, that I probably paid attention to that artificial horizon and some of the other gauges, you know, more than I was looking out the window at the horizon like I was supposed to be. So that part came pretty good. I never did hit my wake turbulence, which upset me because I was doing that pretty consistently, you know, way back when. So, but maybe next time. So next time's going to be the unusual attitude recovery stuff.
That's fun.
Yeah, that should be a good time. My daughter asked me. She goes, "Dad, when do I get to fly with you again?" And my wife said the other night, she's like, "Really, Maddie? You really want to go? Are you sure?" She goes, "Yeah, it's so much fun." I'm like, "Well, soon. We're getting there soon." And I told my instructor, I said, "Yeah, my daughter Madison's really excited to get up with me." She goes, "Oh, just bring her along for the rest of your flights with me. It's fine. She can go as much as she wants." So I might take her, but I don't know if I want to do unusual attitudes with her. That might, you know, get her sick. I'm not sure.
Do S turns.
Yeah.
Those made me sick.
Really?
Or you could do like I did and not know that my instructor was going to throw the, "I'm having chest pains. I need to do an emergency descent right now."
Mm.
I mean, it wasn't for real chest pains, but it was just one of those, I'm an upset passenger, get me down right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have enough time to warn my daughter that this is what we were going to do.
Oh.
She flipped out.
Ah, she's screaming on the way down.
Yeah, she white-knuckled it, and this did. I was like, "Honey, I'm so sorry." I didn't know he was going to do that.
Maybe I'll take her along for my mock check ride, because that would be a great one. It's long.
Oh, yeah.
Watch Daddy sweat.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. Drop a few F-bombs. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's all good. And only other news to say is my written scheduled for tomorrow at 11 a.m.
Yay!
Way to
oh,
be.
Oh, wow.
Dun, dun, dun.
And on that breaking news,
it's a miracle.
I was going to get my instrument written done before you were.
Couldn't let that happen. Couldn't let it happen. Yeah,
I was going to. You know, you were saying you were.
I scheduled
you were
it 2 hours.
For the prep.
I scheduled it 2 hours before we had this call.
Nice. You were talking about your check ride, and I'm like, how are you going to do a check ride without taking the written?
I told you they got rid of that stupid thing. No, yeah, I tweeted. I go, what's those? The different testing centers, it's either CATS or laser grade, and I couldn't think of laser grade, and I wanted to do it at Westwind Aviation, which is at Deer Valley, so I went online and I found CATS, and I looked it up and found their testing centers, and they do have a testing center at Transpac, which is right next to Cutter at Deer Valley, but it's only for their students. So then I had to find laser grade. I found laser grade, and I found that it was at Deer Valley. So I made the call and set it up 11 a.m. All set, ready to go. I'm excited to get it done and over with. And then I'm knocking the rest of this thing out. I'll be a private pilot by the end of the month, come hell or high water.
Good luck.
It's done.
Yeah. Cross my fingers.
Outstanding.
So that is exciting, exciting for me. So I just need to do a little bit more hood work, and then that mock check ride with my instructor. Maybe I'll do two mock check rides with her. I don't know. I think I'm more nervous about the oral, like 2 hours of oral testing with the DPE. You know, this I can recognize a correct answer if given the option in front of me, but if you verbally ask me something, there's a lot of subjects that. You know, I'm fine to spew some answers out, but there's some stuff that I'm just so iffy about, I'll probably just get myself in trouble.
You know, I'm right there with you.
Do short answers, only answer what they ask.
Yeah.
And then the thing that I did was if my DPE threw me a question that I didn't understand, like I may have been able to spit out the right answer, but I didn't understand what it meant, mm-hmm. I would just say it. I would just say, you know, I know this is the answer, but I've never been able to figure out why. And then he would just go on and explain the whole thing. Mm-hmm. They were great.
Yeah.
I mean, they did not hesitate to impart knowledge. I got more out of that experience of sitting doing the oral and it was pretty close to 2 hours. I got more out of that than just about any other part of my training in that short period of time. I really enjoyed it. I, you know, go in there ready to learn because if you listen and pay attention, they've got a lot to teach you.
Good deal.
Well, you know, everybody says that, and mine was the same exact way. Like I learned so much from my oral and the actual flight. And I mean, I had all my books there, but I never even opened them because it was just. You know, either I knew it was, you know, a lot of the stuff you've been learning the whole time. I mean, it wasn't terribly difficult. And if it was something I didn't give enough answer to or something like that, he'd kind of show me what he was looking for.
And I'm not real. The far aim has dust on it because I just haven't been looking in that. And I need to really go through there and start, I don't know, tabbing it or whatever.
In
all those different areas that's in that private pile oral exam guide, you know. I've highlighted each one of the sections that is going to be discussed. So I need to go through there and tab it and read through all that stuff.
There's some cool stuff in there anyway. The AIM is full of all kinds of interesting stuff.
I've did all my ground school on my own. I never did any instruction with my instructor. Actually, that's not exactly true. I did a couple hours with her a month or so ago on weather, and I'm glad I didn't pay for ground instruction with her, and it's not because she doesn't do a good job, but she's a little long-winded for me. I don't, you know, She's kind of one of those people that if you ask her how to get somewhere, she's going to tell you how the bridge was made in order to get there. And she's very thorough, but I don't need all of that information, really. And plus, when you're paying for it, you know, it's like, can I get to the real meat and potatoes of it, the point, really, you know? I did all my own ground instruction to this point and just been using all the books and videos and YouTube and websites and you name it, and I've probably touched it in order to get some sort of information. So that's that, and I will tweet tomorrow of how it goes. I gotta run by and get my instructor to, you know, do my sign off and give me my letter. She just emailed me a few minutes ago. She says, I will do the two sign-offs that go in your logbook and plus a letter I give you. Some take it, some don't. Be sure they emboss the seal on the results, it says. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. Do not lose that paper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Put it in a folder. Make a folder for your check ride. Make sure you have that in there. Your printout of the – what's that? I what is it?
IKEA?
No. The form you have to fill out online.
For your license?
Yeah.
To take the check ride.
Oh.
Whatever that is. You print it out.
I don't remember the acronym either.
Yeah. There's a whole, because that puts you in the system again.
Mm.
It's a pain. It is a royal pain.
Really?
But yeah, because just all this, you got to make sure everything's right, and you can submit it once, and then your instructor has to do it, and then we made some mistakes, so we had to, it was a pain. But you'll do that before your check ride. And then I'd suggest, too, like, if you can do, like, maybe 2 hours with your instructor as, like, a mock oral.
Yeah, she's going to do that, too.
Yeah, because that – I actually spent about 4 or 5 hours with my instructor, and it kind of worried me a little bit because he went more in-depth with everything. But then when it came to the oral, it was like – I knew everything I needed to know. Like, I didn't know everything that, like, he was drilling me on, but it helped a lot.
Mm-hmm. So,
and watch the King video.
Yeah, again, for, like, the fourth time.
Yep.
It's a good video.
Make sure you say JC throughout the entire oral.
Yeah.
If you haven't listened to the CFI cast on check rides,
yeah,
do so.
Mm, okay. No, I think I did hear that one, but... Yeah,
and get Ron Levy's guide to check ride preparedness. Remember that if you're, they have to tell you if you've screwed up and you've failed.
Mm-hmm.
If you've busted, they have to tell you right away.
Yeah.
So if they haven't told you you've busted, you're still in the game.
My DPE made a big thing about that too, because when I forgot the flaps off that short field takeoff for, I don't know, the entire portion of the cross country portion, you know, he tapped on it and I was like, oh crap, and he's like, I didn't say anything, mm-hmm. and I was like, you're right. Because he went over that at the beginning. He's like, look, if I don't, he's like, you're still in the game. He's like, you're still in the game. So he kind of reassured me. He's like, I didn't say you failed. You know, I didn't say those words yet.
Because realistically, what did you do? All you did was add a little extra drag to the airplane. You didn't hurt anything, except for you were probably past the speed limit for flaps deployed.
I don't think we were. Because the 10 degrees is 110 knots.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Yeah, you probably weren't then.
No, so we were fine. And, but it was just one of those things where I was like, oh, crap, I forgot something big. And he was like, don't worry about it.
Nice.
Yeah. But he, oh, man, halfway through my check ride, he was teaching me on everything. Like, it wasn't me demonstrating anything anymore. It was just me listening to everything he had to say. And he's like, I'll do this. I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And then we'll talk about, you know, stuff. And I'd be learning. And then the check ride was over. And I was like, oh, wait, I was in a check ride. And now it's over. So, you know, yeah. no need to worry about any of that stuff. It's you'll forget what you're doing halfway through it.
Brad, have you heard the name of my check ride person?
No, I don't think I have.
It's a woman too. My instructor's a woman. My instructor's.
Oh, it was Brunhilde.
That's right, Brunhilde. Yeah.
See, I'm from Wisconsin where there's a lot of Germans, and so that just doesn't faze me.
Yeah. Matter of fact, Brunhilde is coming back from Germany today, as a matter of fact. She's got a Cessna 210 Turbo that she owns. And I guess the other day, of course, it's in the shop right now because the other day she was flying and she had landed and she was getting ready to turn off the taxiway. She was getting ready to turn right, and all of a sudden, the plane starts wanting to turn left, even though she's got the pedal down to turn right. And she's like, "What in the heck is going on?" And she looks back, and all of a sudden, her left landing gear is starting to collapse on its own, just ever so slightly.
Oh no!
And she's going really, really slow because she's getting ready to exit the exit onto the taxiway, right? But
secure the engine.
Exactly.
So it just leaned over on its side. So that's how it's getting fixed, I guess. What a bummer.
Hopefully that wasn't a prop strike.
No prop strike. It barely even scratched the wing, and that's, you know, what it finally came to rest on. But that's how slow she was going.
Wow. That's very fortunate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Heart very, very little damage. So I don't know if it was a hydraulic issue or the lock mechanism didn't lock or what the deal is. But anyways, glad I don't have to pay for the bill. That's all I know.
Yeah.
The downside to retracts.
Yeah. One more piece of equipment to worry about. So you guys watch Ice Pilots?
Yes.
I found it.
Well, I have.
I found it online.
Love that. Well, they're actually showing season one on National Geographic right now.
Oh.
So you can actually go to their their website and watch the episodes online now.
Oh. They do have them online now.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
It's kind of like Discovery Posts, Mythbusters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I thought I was wondering if they were going to do it because of the
I thought you couldn't because it was in Canada.
Well, they've come to terms with that, so that's why you're now able to see season one. You can't see season two yet, but you can see season one.
Because the last time I was on National Geographic's website, you could see where to click to get the video, but nothing would come up on the screen. It would just sit there and not do nothing. And this was just maybe, you know, 2 months ago at the most. So I don't know if they've changed it since then, but that's what happened to me, is it was just a blank screen. So maybe it's different.
Mikey's funny. He was actually on
Airplane Geeks.
Oh.
Yeah. That poor guy. He's just thrown into the fire. And okay, you're your father's son, and you're the one that's gonna run this, and it's hell or high water. He says he's been fired like three times, and his dad has a meltdown. And all right, get back in here.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a cool place. I mean, you got these guys that just got their commercial pilot's license. They've barely got any hours, and they get hired there. Of course, they're rampy, and they got to shuffle luggage around and do a lot of the crap work. But if they stick it out, they get to fly some awesome planes. Did you guys hear that that report about the pilot that was suffering hypoxia at 17,000 feet in a Cirrus, him and his wife?
Oh yeah,
that was a great recording.
Yeah,
if you listen to
I didn't listen to the recording yet, but
I haven't listened either.
Yeah, it's funny. The recording is like in the beginning. You know, it's like 5 minutes before you even get to that airplane. So they could have cut that down when they put it on the site. But once they finally get there,
gives you pretty good background.
Yeah, totally. It was very, very interesting and educational at the same time. And
It's definitely one of those things that if you and your wife are going to fly together, you know, for a period of time, it's good to that's proof right here that it's good for her to take the ground school,
the pinch hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the pinch hitter, you know what to do in case.
Yeah,
because I guess it sounds like they've been flying together for a long time.
Yeah,
but she was just a passenger and had no idea. She had, you know, basic knowledge, but she was freaking out.
Yeah, she had next to no idea what to do. And she's in a very, very high-tech airplane, first of all. It's not real basic, not a lot of steam gauges. It's all digital, everything. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, it would be a huge learning curve from knowing nothing about flying to here. You've got this, you're flying this big ass computer.
Well, fortunately, it really all she needs is the throttle, which I think it was a FedEx Cirrus. So the throttle and prop and mixture are all in one lever. So pull that back. Wait till this one altimeter thing says, 10,000, and we'll tell you which way to turn. And yeah,
well, some of their issues was that they were in an area that they couldn't get down to that altitude for a long time. They were in some mountainous terrain, and she was on autopilot, so they were trying to help her work the autopilot. Mm-hmm. ATC calls out and go, "Hey, do we have any people, on the air right now that has information on how to work a Cirrus autopilot system?" And a couple guys came on, or one guy came on and helped her with how to tune a few things. But they got her down to, like 14,000 feet, then around 12 or whatever. But they said, "No, you got to continue heading north or south or whatever it was, or else you're going to have to climb again." So they couldn't just drop to like 10,000 feet just because they were going to hit something, I guess.
So did the guy have oxygen and he just,
it wasn't working.
Line pinched?
Yeah, okay. It just wasn't working. And I guess, she wasn't hypoxic, but he was. But they had their oxygen on. But it just wasn't working right. But after they got down to a certain altitude, after a few minutes, he was starting to become a little more coherent, and because he was down for a little while, and so he was the one talking again, and he was telling them what he wanted to do, and they're like, no, if you go back up, you're just going to get hypoxic again. So he still wasn't quite, he was kind
quite
of
there.
Fighting with them about what he wanted to do, and one of the other pilots that was helping him, they sent, there was a plane that diverted course to chase after him for a while just to help him out, to make sure they had eyes on him. And they're like, "No, do what he says. You need to stay down. You need to turn and you need to land at this airport for right now,
Mm-hmm.
And finally they did and everything was cool. But interesting story.
Hmm. That's a good one for ATC.
Mm-hmm.
Nice save.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll have to listen to that.
Yeah, I tweeted the link this week sometime, and if you can find my tweet, there's a quick link to it. Oh, I had a question, a VOR question, and in the book, there's a question that says, refer to figure 25 and 29. I don't know if you've got that computer book or whatever that has all the different figures in there, but it says,
I gave it to you.
No, this is different. This is different.
It's the same one, though.
No, this is a different question. Yeah.
Oh.
This says the VOR is turned to like Bonham Vortac Area 3, and the aircraft is positioned over the town of Sulphur Springs Area 5.
Yep.
Which VOR that indication one is correct, right? And the problem is that you're on a heading of
heading doesn't matter.
Well, all of the VORs in the pictures are either 0 and 18 or – oh, wait.
Oh, the OBS like, is 0
sorry,
or 18?
Sorry. I'm on ADFs here. 0, 30 or 270, right? Or 210 and the reciprocal. So there's only – that's your only options. But however – according to this course line, you're actually on 120. You're on the 120 radial. So, anyways, the answer is B, which is and number 7, which shows the radial of 120, but the flags are, neither one of them are on, so they're neutral, right? And then the needle is deflected all the way to the right. And what they're saying there is that you are crossing over the 030, or no, the wait a minute. You're crossing over 300 and 120 at that time, and you're parallel, or actually
perpendicular,
yeah, with that radial, and so you're neither to nor from, you're neutral. And, mm-hmm. and my instructor goes, this is, I don't, you know, she goes, I don't like this question, nor do I like the answer. And she goes, that doesn't happen. She says, she said that you either have a to flag or a from flag.
Not when you're over it.
Or the flag.
Huh?
You either have to, from, or the flag. That's your only options.
Well, we tried this while we were up, and I couldn't make this happen.
I think some VORs won't, or some OBSs won't do it. It'll just go from to to nice and clean. Other ones will not. Were you were driving the OBS with the VOR, not the GPS?
Yeah, I had both VORs turned to a certain frequency, a certain radial, and we crossed over perpendicular to one, and all that happened was is that the needle went from far left to eventually far right, and the two from flags never did go away. One said to, and then it said from, and that's it. Mm-hmm. It did exactly what she said it was going to do. It never did neutralize.
It's supposed to get, there's the cone of confusion is what it's called. And it's when you're right over it, it's going to go kind of some of them. I've done it in my plane where it'll get all funky on you for a minute because you're right over the VOR. But
oh, this isn't talking about you being directly over top of it.
It's not.
No.
It's talking about,
so,
okay.
You could be
90 degrees off.
Let's say you're 10 or 15 miles of it and you just pass over it and it's at 90 degrees to your left or whatever. And at that second that you're over top of it, you should have neither a to nor a from flag. It should be off or neutral, as they say.
Oh, okay. I see.
But it just doesn't. It didn't happen in this plane anyways because we tried it.
At that VOR, yeah.
Yeah. So you think it might be something to do with the actual VOR on the ground? Or the instruments in the plane?
It could be the one on the ground, too. I don't know, to be honest with you. Yeah.
I can see why they're saying that, though. Because if you're in it, if you're right on it, I mean, how do you know which one you're going to be to or from?
Yeah, because I kind of understand the question. But the question's also crap as far as I'm concerned, because who would ever navigate that way in the first place?
Well, they wouldn't.
I mean, it doesn't even make sense to navigate that direction. Whether or not you have a GPS on board or not, if you only had VORs, you wouldn't be looking for a neutral at some point. I can't.
Actually, you do to find an intersection between two radials from two different VORs.
Well, wouldn't you have, like, but that's when.
So a lot of times, the IFR waypoints are just, you need to be on this radial of this VOR and this radial of this other VOR.
Yeah, but that's different.
But you're not.
Because
perpendicular on top of one and pointing towards another, are you?
It would certainly be a weird way to dial it in.
Yeah.
I would dial it in so that you would want the other one to center. But
I can see for a split second, though, where it's changing from the to the from, it would be neutral for that split second.
Yeah, and the closer you are to the VOR, the tighter that signal is, the further away you get it cones out, you know, so it goes wide. So it might flip in the matter of a second, or it might stay on for a few seconds, you know, as you pass. So it kind of varies. But I just, you know, I understand that the FAA wants to put some trick questions in there to get you to think, but it'd be nice if they did it with something that was somewhat realistic. I just don't find that would be happen once out of 100 times.
Yeah.
I just don't.
On the plus side, the oral and the practical are the realistic parts of the whole.
Yeah.
thing. Mm-hmm. So you go in, get your passing grade on the written, and then you concentrate on the stuff that matters, which is the oral and the practical.
Mm-hmm.
And bring it up with Brunhilde. Just say, hey, we tried this, it didn't work.
Yeah.
She'll be impressed that you thought about it and tried it out, you know, and have an opinion about it.
I'll have to hit her up, see if she can make it work. So I don't like their questions sometimes.
Yeah, who does?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, God forbid it makes sense.
Remember, it's choose the best answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the correct answer.
Yeah, the least
all the time.
The least bad.
That's mm-hmm. exactly what it is.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, I guess that was. Yeah, I wasn't visualizing that right because.
Yeah, because what you're saying is true too. When you're directly over top of it, yeah, I can't sense it correctly. Cause...
But I see what you're. I got the. I think I got that question wrong.
Well, I don't
try it on the Nav Trainer app.
I don't even got to look at the stupid pictures anymore. I just know it's number 7.
and that's what happens with the written is you just end up knowing what it is.
Well, with some of these questions that you just don't make any sense, you read them enough times, you're like going, well, whatever, man. Whatever you want to say it is fine. It's 7 now as far as I'm concerned.
I did. While I was studying for the written, I did learn a lot for the oral, though. And it helped that, like, you're kind of possibly going to be in the same position where you're going to get the written done, and then you're going to be right on to constantly studying for the oral and the practical. So
absolutely.
It'll help. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Just spend a little bit each night doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you guys remember what I went through that last week.
Oh, you hammered it big time.
Man.
Every day.
That was a rough week.
Yeah, there was another question here that I wasn't too fond of. I can't seem to find it right now, but anyway.
I'm looking that up. So, Mark, you do anything?
I haven't done any flying at all. I haven't. The weather sucked, and my work schedule has been crazy.
Has it been windy there?
Windy, rainy. There was actually another 3 inches of snow up in the Sierras.
Jeez.
In Whew. June.
We were getting a lot of your wind after the fact, and even had, like, you know, what do you call it? Brain fart? Carry on.
So I'm my schedule looks like I'm probably in about 2 weeks from now I'm gonna just knock everything out. I'm right at my cross country stuff, so I'm gonna do one more long dual day and night, and then it's all on me. And then we do the stage check and prep for the check ride, and done. So I'm like right hot on your heels. So it'll be nice to get it knocked out, because I've got a lot of stuff this summer that I want to be able to go rent, either the Archer or, you know, something, get checked out in something else, and be able to just hop in and go.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a lot of friends in the Bay Area that are like, oh, dude, you got to come and see me. And they're in like Palo Alto or, you know, Half Moon Bay or, you know, areas like that. And I'm like, I don't want to drive the 5 hours. I mean, it's literally, truly, it's a 2.5 hour drive. But once you get into the whole South Bay mess, it just drags it out. And, you know, I've got friends that want to go down to Santa Cruz. Okay, that's a hour flight, you know, and instead of a 5 hour drive. So, you know, I just want to hurry up and knock it out. That way the girls and I can go, just jump in the plane and go. But for the next couple of weeks, it's not going to happen. Plus, we just got the new 7-day forecast. We were supposed to have clear and in the 80s, and now we're going to be in the mid to high 60s, and it's going to be cloudy and wet. So they don't know. But so I've done a lot of nothing. I've listened to a lot of podcasts. I've caught up on all my podcasts.
Man, I wish I was there.
Except for an episode 12 floating around somewhere that I haven't heard yet.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah,
yet.
You know.
But you know,
I haven't heard the last about now 30 minutes of it. But
yeah.
In my defense, it was 2 hours and 10 minutes.
That's a long one.
And that's edited. Most of it edited right now.
Sweet. So. Brad's first podcast with us, and it's already an Alpha Bravo.
Nice.
Awesome. I'm just gonna make it an Alpha Zulu.
Alpha Omega.
Mm-hmm. 26 short segments.
We broke this
I think
one.
I may
we broke it up into 15-minute parcels for you guys.
I kinda wanna release the second one as Zulu instead of Bravo and see if anybody
picks up on it.
Yeah, so where's Bravo through Yankee?
I know I was thinking of wind shear, Mark. Lots of wind shear and surface wind shear too, man. Ground wind shear is bad. He's having like every time there's like crazy wind like that, 30 knots and so, I keep one I I run out to Deer Valley once in a while, and I sit up on the observation deck and watch, because I like to watch people, you know, deal with the wind, you know, and see if I can see any cool planes slip it in or anything like that. But no one does it. You know, they typically just dip the wing into the wind and just do it the normal way instead of slipping. Or
see if you can find any tips, techniques, tricks, mm-hmm. mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I found that other VOR question that pissed me off today. So, refer to figure 30, illustration 1. What outbound bearing is the aircraft crossing? And when I think about that, it sounds exactly like that other question where it was crossing the radial from the VOR. It was crossing it, right? And so in this particular figure, let's see, refer to figure 30. Okay, so, and this is an ADF, actually, not a VOR question.
I was going to say, this has to be an ADF question. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is an ADF question, and number one shows, and this is one where you can set the movable card, all right? So the airplane's pointed at 330, all right? The needle is pointed at 210, and the back of it would be at 030.
Oh, yeah.
So, and is the ADF card pointed in the right way, or did they mess that up too?
Well, so it's like this. So 330 is at the top, and that's good. The way okay. your plane is pointed at. Yep. And so then the needle off to the left and low, so behind your left wing, 210, and 030 off to your right. So what outbound bearing is the aircraft crossing? And
it's like 120 or something like that.
The answer is 030, which is
right.
the from of
yeah.
You know,
that's the bearing. Yeah, that's the radio. If it was a VOR, that would be the radial.
So you're not crossing it. You're on the damn thing. All right. And that's one of the tricky questions, is that they said forget the word crossing. Well, why use the word crossing then?
You're flying across it, right? You're going, you're on a heading of 330. So at that instant, you're crossing the 030 bearing.
Right.
And in 2 seconds, you're not going to be on it anymore.
Okay. That's the only question like that. Every other question on here is, are you to or are you from? And then you get to this one. Which one are you crossing? What? Here we go back to like that VOR thing. You're crossing it, but you're not crossing it or whatever. Anyways, I got that one memorized. I'm not going to miss that one. If that one comes up, I've spent enough time dwelling over it.
How's your weather?
It's nice and clear and good skies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But how's your written weather?
Oh, well, I plan on missing several of those, if that's what you're asking.
Weather was the most fun part.
You know what? I slam dunk the weather.
I love
was
one of the weather.
Things. We have 300 days of VFR. Screw weather. I've gotten better with weather and reading those prognostic charts and the radar summary charts and the weather depiction charts. That was the part that was killing me, but I'm finally getting it. And as many of these practice tests that I've done, you know, there's less than a handful of them altogether, so not too worried.
Oh, you'll love doing your IFR. And maybe
I don't believe that you actually scheduled your. You're just trying to get us off your back.
I know.
We're gonna need to see a scan of that.
Dude, you don't know how I was scrambling this week, because I said I will have it done by the end of the week. I believe tomorrow qualifies as the end of the week, and so I might not have got it done early, but it will be done by the end of the week. Yeah, so, I've been scrambling to.
Of course, we heard end of month for how many months?
Yeah, right. Now the new end of the month is this month, and I'll have my license.
Were we bugging you back in like January to get this done?
Oh yeah, yeah. But I don't like studying. Even stuff that's interests me, you know. I studied all the stuff that was, you know, easy as far as I was concerned, you know. But it was, you know, what it was for the longest time is that just the formulas on how to do things. I would do them on the practice, and and fine, I'd move on to something else, and I'd practice that, and then I'd do a practice test, and I'd get to one of them, like, shoot, I already forgot how to do that, you know? Like, how much time does it take to get to such and such airport? Here's the wind and how fast it's going, and your true airspeed is this, you know? And I'm like, dang, now I forgot that formula of how the steps to go through, you know?
Just plug that into your handy E6B.
I don't have an electronic E6B.
Didn't you download the app?
I do, but I don't use it. I do everything off the whiz wheel.
Yeah, you can't take the app into the testing center anyway.
Yeah,
that's why I was glad I have my sporties. And it, as you're going through the question, it's prompting you for that piece of the question.
Can you take an electronic E6B into the testing?
Yeah, there's two that are approved.
Yeah,
sporties and another one.
Yeah. I thought you could. I don't know. I never did end up buying one. I got good enough with this with the whiz wheel and honestly it's just faster.
It is pretty fast.
Yeah, before you get the first thing typed in, I'll already have the answer because all I gotta do is move the wheel one time.
Yeah, but when you start doing the actual like navigation planning, I found that using the sporties was a lot faster because you could plug it in and then you could just go right down the list of, you know, right over the little sheet that we're using.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, all right, let me plug in the wind. Let me plug in my speed. And then it was like, bam, okay, that gives me the answer. I click the fuel or whatever, and then it would copy the result of that over so I could just, boom, down the line. I'm done.
Yep.
So now I really like using the sporties, though. Foreflight does all the work for me now.
There you go.
You've discovered the dirty little secret.
I know. Well, and now with the new updates, it's like, man, I have my whole entire like thing there. So it was like, all right,
trip log, yeah.
Let me just copy that trip log down onto a piece of paper just in case something happens. But
it was funny the other, what was it, last weekend when it was the National Learn to Fly Day?
Mm-hmm.
I took
my friend up.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, cool. That's when I took my girls up to the airport, and my buddy who owns the Cirrus flew up there for it too. And he ended up taking my girls up in his Cirrus. That was the only flight that he ended up doing. But he's showing me. He's like, look, I got a new iPad. I got a new iPad. I'm like, okay, your wife finally let you buy one. He's like, shut up.
He's in it.
And then he goes.
He's in a Cirrus. He's in a Cirrus.
The man has a Cirrus.
And he needs an iPad to do what?
That's what I was telling him. That's what I told him. I'm like
something.
You might as well just give me the iPad because you're never going to use this thing. He goes, oh, it's just kind of it's fun to have.
Yeah.
He goes, but I got to show you this new software that I found. It is so cool.
Oh my God.
And he whips it open. I'm like, he pulls it up and I'm like, oh, you got ForeFlight. He's like, oh, you know about this?
Everyone who doesn't even have an iPad knows about ForeFlight.
I'm like, oh my God. I said, I whipped out my iPhone and I went, it's right here. Yeah. He's like, oh.
Oh, yeah. So much for the wind out of
Isn't
his sails.
Isn't it cool? Exactly. Isn't it cool?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, man, I've had this thing for a year and I love it.
I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that ForeFlight is not on Android,
John, you're supposed
or any
to
of
be
the tablets
that,
right now,
aren't you? Aren't you building that now?
I've been cutting grass, but still not done.
So what happens when you live on a farm?
The iPad inside of a Cirrus is good for watching movies when you're on autopilot.
Exactly.
But if it wasn't for the fact that the it wasn't on Android right now, I mean, I would have bought an Android tablet. It's the only thing keeping me from buying an Android tablet right now is the fact that ForeFlight won't be on it.
It's on the cheap.
My entire flight would have been $80.
Well, no, because you would have taken a lot longer to get there.
You would have just gotten back, but that's fine.
And it's JVFR only.
And what...
I would have been fine. Yeah. Okay, so it would have been like $120. I spent like $300. Still.
Was that your pro rata share, or did you just pay for it all?
I paid for it all. And he bought lunch, but and he paid for me to go shooting the day before and bought alcohol that night.
Oh,
so
yeah, the shooting.
He still spent less than I spent, than like half of what it would have been. But yeah, the shooting was fun. I did better than he did, but still, and we would have had more fun in that Cub.
I'm going to have to try it. I just don't think I'm going to be a fan of tandem seating aircraft, and I would like to have a Citabria, but I just don't – I don't know. Just don't know about the tandem seating business.
Yeah. We'll see what I can get into when I get to Florida. See if I can afford it.
It's like one of those things that if if I had the ability to start my own flying club and say, hey, I want to get like 10 people together, no more than 10, but I want to have 3 aircraft. And one would be like a Citabria, and one would be like, you know, a Cherokee just for a regular 4-passenger, and then possibly even a twin, because you can get a cheap like
twins are really cheap, but the insurance is a bear.
Yeah, you can pick up like a very nice old Piper Apaches, right? They're just ugly little twins. They're not even really that fast or whatever, but you can pick those up for like $30,000 and have yourself a twin to fly with. But like something like you had 3 reasonable airplanes, but they all had different missions that they can accomplish, you know, something that can hold 6 people, something that can hold 4 people, something that can hold 2 people, and do something like that. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Our club is basically a scaled up version of what you're describing. We've just got, you know, everything from warriors to archers to challenger to arrow to 6. So you can fly, you know, the Cherokee 6, you can put anything that you can close the doors on in it.
Yeah.
It'll lug it. You know, you'll burn a lot of gas, but you'll get there.
There was a really good story that was on, I wonder if it was like Never Again, AOPA Never Again. And it was this guy who was ferrying a dead body, you know, to a funeral or something like that. Like the guy died somewhere and they had to, you know, move him or whatever. And he didn't have the 6 at that time. So the person's dead body was actually sitting in the passenger seat, but in a zipped up bag, you know. I'm serious. Yeah. So and he was going through the most hellacious rainstorm you ever saw in your life with lightning or whatever. And he was just like kind of freaked out about the whole thing. And he said as soon as he landed, like that week, he sold that plane and got a Cherokee 6. He goes, I'm never sitting next to something like that again, you know, because you could like you said, mm-hmm. take the seats out of the back of the 6 and you can lug around a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You can put full size bikes in the back of a 6.
Yeah, but my biggest problem with the whole renting situation right now is just that, like, it's such a pain to have to come back at certain times and not be able to, like, take it for a whole day or a weekend.
You can't take it for a weekend?
No, I can't just take it for an overnight.
It's going to
cost me an arm and a leg.
So you can, but it's all about you're required to put 3 hours on it if you keep it for a full day, right?
But yeah, but at the same time, it's like, you know, they have two 172s really, mm-hmm. you know, and they have a lot of people who are training, so it's even hard for me to get 4 hours in one of them sometimes. And it's like I don't want to take it for an overnight and then have to pay the extra money on it, and then people aren't going to be able to train. You know, I just wish I could get into a good flying club.
The Archer I'm flying, we don't have there's no scheduling system for it. It's just like you contact Jackie, my flight instructor, and see if anyone, you know, is planning on flying it whenever you want it or whatever. But they're just setting up right now an online scheduling thing for it, which will be kind of a little more convenient than having to get a hold of her to use it, because that's probably what I'm going to fly for the most part, you know, since that's what I'm most familiar in. But
yeah,
our club uses aircraftclubs.com, and it's pretty nice, you know. Generally, if I can plan a week ahead of time, I can get an airplane just about whenever I want. And if I want to take, we can do two 1-week or 1 2-week trip per year, and there's no, because we all own the plane, so there's no overnight, you know, minimum number of hours or anything. I could fly, you know, to Oshkosh for a week, and I would only pay for the flying time. In fact,
that's perfect.
Two of the guys are doing that, and then I've got my Oshkosh schedule is challenged because of my son's 6th birthday is the 28th.
Mm. So right there, the end of that weekend, huh?
Yeah, the Thursday, right at Thursday. So I've got a plane for Monday and Tuesday, and then I've got a plane for Friday and into Saturday. And we'll see. I'd like to be there at Oshkosh for the air show the night air show on Friday. That would be fun.
And then Saturday night?
And then no, and then Saturday, during the day, he's got his birthday party thing with, you know, the other kids and everything. And it would probably behoove me to be in attendance. So I'd if I can make it all work, I'll head out Friday, you know, spend that night and then come back Saturday. Get up at O'Dark 30 and hit the they open the field at 6, so I'll make a lot of friends on my way out.
Especially the ones next to your airplane, the tents next to your airplane.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see how they do it, if they will give you a tug and let you tow out to the taxiway before you power up.
Oh, because you just scare the living out of the people next to you just starting up an airplane like 10 feet from them.
If not, just push it.
Yeah. Out of the grass.
Out of the grass, good luck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Just push it. Wasn't going to happen
just
last
get a
year.
Whole bunch of, just get a whole bunch of people. Yeah, not last year. And the night air show is on Saturday.
Oh, it's Saturday night, not Friday night?
Yeah, it was Saturday night last year. It's Saturday night again. That's... Start time, 8:45.
Oh, man.
When is the podcast get together?
Okay, I don't know about that. The things I do know are, oh God, where did I put it? A couple things. This is actually one of my shout outs. Airplaneista is doing the Osh Bash. Just a big social get together there. That is Friday night at 6.
Okay.
Right after the air show. And that is, I want to say, at the press. Where was that? It's next to the tower somewhere. Some press, EAA press site or something like that. I know Mart from Air Pigs is doing the bacon party, but I don't know when he's doing that. He had two last year.
Yeah, I think he was talking about two or three this year.
Yeah. So I know he's doing those, but I don't know. Like, there's a lot of stuff. Like, the My Transponder meetup hasn't been scheduled. I don't know when Potapalooza is yet. Let's see if I can. I don't think any of the schedules are really up yet.
Mm-hmm. I really, really, really want to try and go, but we're gonna start doing our family vacations in July also. And it's like I'm going to have to take off like almost the full month of July to make all this work. We're going to do something that second full week of July between, you know, the 10th and the 16th, something in there. And then something that third week of July too, from the 17th to the 23rd, something in there. I think we're going to go to Colorado 1 week and maybe California the next. But I would like to do like maybe a Friday, Saturday, Sunday at Oshkosh. But I just fly out there by myself, I guess.
Yeah. And there's no schedules up yet. I imagine by the end of the month we'll see those again. I think it was like mid-June is when we saw it last year, I think.
You remember what day that podcast get together was last year?
It was Thursday night last year. And the My Transponder meetup was Tuesday night, I believe.
Okay. Well, hopefully they'll get that information out. I'd like to be there for that. That'd
yeah, I remember it being like mid-June last year, because that's when I was talking to Adam about the Osh planner. So I don't think it'll be much longer before we'll start really seeing a lot more stuff coming out of it, because it's coming pretty fast.
Yeah, I got to hunt down plane tickets and stuff. I probably could fly with Bill Will, but he's leaving at the beginning of the week and staying all week, so.
You could ride back.
Could always do that. But if he's probably going to have four people riding up there and four people riding back.
There's also the ride share on EAA.
Yeah, no one else is. I've checked. I mean, based on what my schedule is, either they seem to be going for the whole week if they're going to fly up there, not for a weekend.
Right.
If they're coming from Arizona. And there's the only other thing I found on there was some people driving, and that interests me very little to none.
Yeah, I'm one of the people on there with that, because I had a friend of mine isn't going anymore. So I
driving his.
I got a ride from Baltimore. I mean, if somebody wants to fly me, sure. But economically, I can only afford to really drive. So, love to share gas with someone. And a campsite. I have, you know, I have a tent there. I'm going to be hopefully camping around a bunch of people. I know Larry and Martin, all that, a couple other people.
Inevitably, you will be camping by a bunch of people. It's just a question of how well you know them now.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, there's a bunch of people that, like, I know that we're trying to get, like, a block of camping going.
Well, if I can get it figured out, hopefully I can camp with somebody.
Well, you can camp with me if you want.
All right. Well, I really
currently don't. Right now, I have nobody in my tent.
All right.
But me.
Well, that'll work if I can make this happen. I gotta get figured out, and I'm gonna get it figured out like in the next, you know, 10 days, hopefully.
Anywho, any other? Let's just go roll on with the shout outs because I started mine with the Oshbash.
Shout outs. Amanda Yonkin and all her family.
Yeah.
So sad to hear.
That's
I was really hoping she's going to pull through all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Feeling for Kyle for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was reading the updates as much as I could on Facebook and yeah.
Other than that, I got no others.
I'll give a shout out to my CFII. Did my primary work with him also, Dave Tannehill. Great instructor. And he actually has to take his check ride to he's going to pick up a little part-time 135 work just because he feels like flying twins. So best of luck to him on his 135 ride.
Oh, I did have one other. I did have one other, and it is to a new podcast called The Stuck Mike AV Cast.
Oh, you dog. Oh,
yeah.
Did I steal yours, Mike? Mark?
Yeah, you got mine. I was going to shout out to Rick and the rest of the guys.
Sorry.
It's in my queue.
Stuck Mike Avcast. So that's Victoria, which is Toria Fly at Twitter, and Rick Felty.
Oh, yeah.
Rick Felty. Carl Villari and Lynn Costa, the pilot report. And Carl Villari is expert aviator. So they just started a podcast. They've just got, I think, a couple episodes out right now, but you can find them on iTunes.
And they have a feed burner, so it works with anything.
Oh, yeah.
For those of us who, you know, don't use iTunes.
Such a rebel.
Look, I got my phone. My phone has 4G or 3G or whatever everywhere. It's
weren't you the one that was
tweeting
that you were jealous that I was going to WWDC?
Yes.
You're like a secret little fanboy, aren't you?
Well, no.
Called out.
The reason why I'm jealous is because I do love my Mac. And the reason why I don't use iTunes is because I have my Android phone. Okay? I don't buy into the iPhone, but I do have an iPad, so I am intrigued about iOS 5. Also, part of me just wants to upgrade to Lion because it's new, and I'm geeky about anything tech. So, you know, I'm a geek at heart. As long as it's not Windows, I'm all over it. So. I have a shout out. A friend of mine, Tim, is after his trip to Florida to get his advanced ratings down there, kind of fell through. He is now getting back into starting his IFR. So he's actually doing it with the instructor I did my private with. So just shout out to him and good luck with getting that done. And glad that he's back into flying.
All right.
I think that's what's left of my shout outs.
Mark, anything since I stepped all over yours?
No, I'm good.
Sorry.
You got mine, so.
Okay.
You can reach all of us at In the Pattern Podcast at podcast@inthepatternpodcast.com. On Twitter is In the Pattern. So my transponder group for In the Pattern Podcast. And lastly, you can find us on iTunes as In the Pattern Podcast. You can reach me, John, at john@inthepatternpodcast.com, or on Twitter and my transponder as Pilot Conway.
Chris?
Yeah, you can find me at chris@inthepatternpodcast.com as well. On Twitter at CHOLUBAZ, that's CHOLUBAZ, and my transponder is also CHOLUBAZ. And Mark?
Yeah, you can find me at mark@inthepatternpodcast.com, student pilot Mark on Twitter, and M. Lacoste on my transponder. Give us a shout.
I'm Brad Kane. You can reach me on Twitter at Bravo Romeo Alpha Delta Kilo Oscar Echo Hotel November.
And lastly, if you'd like, you can leave us a text message or a voicemail. The phone number is 707-PCAST-01. That's 707-PAPA-CHARLIE-ALPHA-SIERRA-TANGO-01.
Well, that wraps up this episode of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Remember, make left traffic, you're cleared for the option.
This and other great shows at the Aviation Podcast Network.
TheVoicesInYourHead.com.
The members of the In the Pattern Podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with, the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, these guys are student pilots, so anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on an aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.
That's worth getting out of the plane.
Yeah, but you can't drink, though.
Yeah,
you
8 hours bottle to throttle. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Wisconsin. They have different drinking laws.
That's a little like mental masturbation there, right? You get over there and
Already spent my money for the month. Oh well, put that on for next month.
It includes
you don't need ramen.
Yeah. He got the I actually had converted the checklist for him into LaTeX. I don't know if you guys know what LaTeX is, but I love it. Oh my god.
You're the one.
Yeah.
It's hot outside. Damn hot. I'm turning on the air conditioner.
You're killing me.
Hang on. I got to find this.
Are you marking spots or something in your timeline?
Oh, yeah. I hear a sound effect coming. Yeah.
Actually, it has nothing to do with that. It's the... Hang on. Let me close down.
Could aviation be more screwed up in its units of measurement, by the way?
No.
Nautical miles, feet above for altitude, inches of mercury for pressure, Celsius for temperature.
True. I understand the nautical miles.
Yeah, nautical miles is the only one that makes sense.
Well, that and Celsius.
But then you get a weather brief and it's in statute miles.
Yes. Yeah.
No, only the surface ones, right? Only the surface reports are statute miles, visibility.
Right. Some planes you get in and the airspeed indicator is miles per hour.
Yeah.
I don't understand that at all.
Bill's.
It's because it looks like it's going faster.
Yeah. Bill's 182 that I flew in was like that. How about a shout out to... Shaquille O'Neal. He retired today. The Shaq Diesel is hanging up the Nikes. He's retiring as of today. We weren't expecting that.
Is he
going to
get his pilot's license?
I don't think they make a small plane that fits his big ass.
He'd have to fly a BBJ.
No kidding.
Yeah. He's got the money for it. Yeah.
With a custom flight deck.